Hi, hello. I'm so excited to announce that I'm doing a live and virtual episode of this podcast, Why Won't You Date Me? It's April 5th, live at the Elysian in Los Angeles, but anyone in the world can tune in. Tickets are on sale now at moment.co/date me. And if you can't watch it live, it's no big deal. It'll be on video on demand for up to 2 weeks later. It's going to be a nice time. I think you'll like it. And you can get your tickets at moment.co/date me. Or check this episode description for details. Why Won't You Date Me? It's a podcast where me, Nicole Byer, is exploring the thematic things of love and shit. Because I've done this podcast for like 5 years and I can't figure out why I'm still single. So now I'm just trying to figure out what love is. So my guest today, she's a comedian, an actress, and an Emmy-nominated writer that you've seen in American Auto and The Daily Show. You can see her in two new projects, Swarm on Amazon Prime, in a part that I was like, yes, bitch, yes. Swarm, if you haven't seen it, I genuinely really fucking love it. There's a wild discourse on Twitter. I don't really agree with it. I think it's entertainment. I think it was written in a way, I don't know. Whatever, we'll get into it. In the upcoming movie, The Blackening, I'm thrilled she's here today. It is Ex-Mayo.
Oh my God, what a fucking intro.
Listen, I love you. I think you're so wonderful and funny. And I think back to one of our first interactions. It was at Sweet Chick.
No, please do not say this. Do not. Don't you fucking dare. I was, oh my God, I fanned the fuck out over you as a share. And you guys are just trying to eat your fucking waffles and bacon. And I'm all like, bah, 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 Nicole, I'm in love with you.
But it was so nice. And I like remember it. And then when I started seeing you pop up places, I was like, damn, I love that you did the thing. Because sometimes people will be like, I love you. I'm also an actor. And then you never see them again. And then I was like, because I don't know, I got to a place a couple years back, I guess it's more than a couple years back, where I was like, whenever I see a woman who like looks kind of like me, who's bigger than the normal, do you mind me saying that? Because
no,
some people don't identify
no,
as bigger.
It's a fact.
Okay.
It's fact.
Okay. I didn't want to offend you because one time I said to a friend, I was like, you know us fat girls. And she was like, who are you talking to? And I was like, does she not know? But you know, when you see bigger girls, especially bigger black girls, I'm like, let's do the damn fucking thing. I just get excited. So yeah, it was nice to like have that interaction and then see you fucking blast the fuck off. Like, I don't know, like a year and a half later. It was wild. It was so cool.
Well, I was like, you were like UCB royalty and you had already become famous and skyrocketed. And I had told you when I first met you, I'm like, yeah, I was the intern at The Beast when you did Mateo Lane's show that he notoriously did over and over every Tuesday. And I was and I like studied him to this day. I think he's one of the best stand-ups I've ever seen. And you were in there and you had made a very like racist, like blue joke, like in like making fun of white people. And then you were like, it doesn't matter, there's UCB, there's no black people here. I say, yes, we are. You were like, what? There's what? And I was an intern.
And I remember it. I wish I could remember the joke.
I forgot what, but it was so funny. Well. Only I laughed and I hollered. It was something about a slave and white people. You know, white people don't even say the word soul. You better say slave, bitch. Oh, you better say slave.
I'm pretty sure it was a joke about Santa Claus and how there was like a whole like people were like, Santa's white. And I'm like, actually, he is white. He has slaves. Yeah. And no white people like laughing at that joke. And then that's so funny that you were there to be like, I'm here.
No, because too, it was just like she needs to know that she has community in here right now because UCB is white as fuck. And I'm yes. just like, no, there is somebody here who gets that joke. And it's just kind of like white people just get their asses get so clenched and their fucking like holes yeah. become baby powder. And they're just like, Because it's like, as soon as they hear some racist shit, but it's like, guys, it's true. It's real. Like, if Nicole doesn't fucking make a joke about it, she'll crumble. Like, if I don't, like, it will ruin me if I don't turn it into a joke. Like, what is she supposed to do?
Yeah, just like be in this world and not giggle. Wait, can we just talk about this wall behind you?
Oh, yes. Your producer loved it, too.
It's great. It's very Saved by the Bell. Did you paint this or what is this?
Absolutely not, bitch. I can barely do a finger paint. Okay, so shout out to Very Gay Paint, not sponsored. Shout out to Very Gay Paint.
Okay.
I like my homegirl Corinne, who you know, Corinne Wells from UCB. Mm-hmm. So she was here at my house and I was like, bitch, all these task rabbits keep talking about they know how to paint, they know how to paint, they know how to paint. Everything I see that they're posting, this is not, it's not given. It's not what I want. So she was like, have you ever heard of Very Gay Paint? And and this is Corinne. So I'm like, you're doing a bit. She's like, no. This is real.
No, girl, this is real. This is what they call themselves.
No, yeah. And she was like, this is my friend and everything like that. Jensen, I literally like emailed them on a Friday. We had like a like design type talk on a Monday. That next Friday, they were in my house and they've done two walls. I'll show you the other wall too before we get off. But I just sent them the color scheme and the mood board. Mm-hmm. Honey, this is all their design. This is all they're doing. And they're going to do
it looks
more
great.
But we're just trying to figure out, like, I want wallpaper here. We're going to figure out shelving first, and then they're going to take over. They're going to do it all.
I love this. Is this, may I ask, is this a rental?
Yes, ma'am.
When I was renting my apartment, I regret not decorating it the way I want it to, like the whole apartment. I did my room. I did built-ins. I nailed things to the wall that I did not unnail when I moved out. Yeah. But I regret not doing that to the whole apartment because we kept it pretty neutral. So like when we moved out, we wouldn't have to like repaint and stuff. But it's like, yeah, it's just a coat of paint. Who fucking cares? Make your space yours.
Yeah. And I feel so much joy in like nesting. And now it's like even harder for me to leave my apartment. But I'm honestly not interested in owning a home for myself. I want to do like business investment, but I want to keep that overhead and low, baby, and keep making more money. Like, I have a good fucking setup. I have no interest. It's just me. My apartment is fucking huge, Nicole. And I have a swimming pool in the back that nobody uses. There's 16 other tenants. Yes, girl. I'm rent controlled. I don't pay for water. We're not going anywhere.
No, never fucking leave. Rent controlled? I love Sex and the City. And when Carrie Bradshaw was like, my rent controlled apartment, I was like, that's the New York City dream. And then I moved to LA and I was like, ooh, they got them here too? That's just the dream in general.
Absolutely.
Wait, so you're from LA. You're from South Central.
South Central, Inglewood, yeah.
How did you end up in New York?
Oh, I never told you this. No, because I was screaming at how much I'm obsessed with you. And probably was like, you should wrap it up. I think my internal dialogue was like, her chicken is getting cold. We should wrap it up. But I got to New York. So like every actor, I quit about three times. So during the time when I had quit, I was like, I am not a 9-to-5 bitch. She cannot be behind a desk. So I went into all these other things that were creative. So I went into costuming. Mm-hmm. I went to film school. Like a lot of these reality show bitches that you see now, they were nobody in 2012. And we were shooting their pilots very badly, might I add. I was very bad. But I was, you was 23, 24. You out here, you just trying. You feel me? So I started doing makeup and I actually went to Priscilla Ono School of Beauty, who's now the ambassador and does all of Rihanna's makeup.
For Fenty.
The nicest human ever. Like I emailed her after we graduated, like, I have a dark skinned girl. She wants this. She wants a pink lip. Tell me what to do. She's like, you mix this and this. You don't need to buy expensive products. Like she's just the shit. I fucking love Priscilla. Mm-hmm. So at that time, you know, in 2013, there was no Fenty, no Pat McGrath, you know, Makeup Forever wasn't trying to be inclusive in shades. Baby, we had MAC and that's it. So
that's it.
Yep. So I found this woman named who is still ultra famous. Like she had like groomed Biggie on the Juicy video shoot. Like she's that girl, right? And during that time in 2013, Nicole, she was the only black woman that I saw that had their own makeup line. She was selling it on QC, baby. Okay.
QVC. What is her makeup line?
QVC, QC. I think it might be just her name.
QVC.
QVC. There we go. QVC.
Mm-hmm.
So when I saw on Instagram that she had a website, I was like, oh, if she got a number, I'm calling her. So I'd already researched her and knew that she taught a class. And if you work fast, if you do the class, you do really well. She'll take her best students to work with her and work Fashion Week. So mind you, I am born and raised in LA and I could ride through the city with my eyes closed and nothing at the time scared me. Like I wasn't scared. Like I need a little fear. I need a little rah. Like I need a little, ooh, you know, like that keeps me on my toes. That keeps me like excited, right? But I was so bored with LA. And so I called her. She didn't answer. She called me back and I was like, hey, I know you don't know me, but I'm another black woman who does makeup. Can you please tell me how to have longevity in this business? And she's like, you know what? Normally I don't do this, but go ahead and shoot. And she gave me the realest and best free game that I've ever gotten about how much I charge. She was like, well, how much do you charge? I was like, $60. I said, like, some amount like $50 to $60. And she was like, and you go to them? I said, yeah, I go to them. And she was like, and you set up your chair and you bring your light. And how much does your foundation cost? I'm like, $45. She was like, I charge them $600 to come to me. Okay?
Oh.
And those numbers, especially being a black girl from the hood, like that, I'm like, what? And she told me, like, she's seen these white women out here charging $1,000 to pluck just to do a little eye. She's like, girl, if you do good makeup and I do good makeup, why they gonna pay us what we worth? They not gonna do that. Why would they do that? And she taught me, she said, you need to charge $250 minimum. She was like, you could do these bitches that want to go to the club, you could do brides, all of that. But if you have a constant Rolodex of about five people, you know, that's a cute little $750 you making them up. Why not just do that, right? So then she was like, hey, you know, I teach a class, so I play stupid. I said, oh, my God, what? A class? What is a class? And she was like, yeah, you know, and I bring my best students there. So if you come and you do the class, you can, you know, potentially work fashion with me. I said, say less. I was so broke, Nicole. I could not drive to the bank to put the money in the savings and the check-ins. I had to call my best friend, Dorian. Who she lived right up the street from me. My best friend's on 4th and Hardy. My mom was on 104th and Prairie. She had to come get me, take me to the bank to put the savings and the check-ins. And I bought a one-way ticket to New York. And my mama was like, Mija, I'll get your ticket back. I emailed Ashunta like, here's my ticket. And she said, oh, you're not playing. I was like, no, ma'am. And to this day, never heard from her.
Wait, you never heard from her?
No.
So you went all the way to New York and didn't hear from her?
Yep. I said, there is a reason. The Lord knew she was instrumental in me getting to New York because I needed the opportunity. I needed to know that there was a reason and a purpose to buy the ticket. I think she texted me maybe 3 weeks later, like, and I was like, hey, I decided to move here. She was like, congratulations or whatever. But as far as that opportunity, never heard from her about that ever again. So what I did was, yes, ma'am. But what I did was see, because I'm solution oriented almost to a fault. That's why sometimes my friendships don't go as planned, because I'm not finna sit here and you finna complain to me all day. Like, I'm so pragmatic. I'm like, how do we get out of this? And then we don't want to feel this no more, right? Okay, boom. So I hit up all my homies from L.A. because, you know, L.A. or New York, you know, so a lot of my homies in L.A. had connects to New York. So I ended up dressing the models and I had went to Alvin Ailey to audition to be a part of their summer intensive shut out of high school. I started as a dancer. Like, I am originally a dancer. So I always wanted to be in New York, always. But when I went out there, still was not acting. With that, hang it up. It's done. We didn't audition 11 times. It's not for you, ex. That's what I thought. So as I'm, like, being with the models and, like, dressing all of them and everything like that and making friends, Nicole, everybody was broke. Nobody got no money. And I said, well, hey, I ain't got no money. Hey, you out here doing this, so why the fuck can't I do it? But still hadn't registered to me that I was going to stay. I went to go look at an apartment. I went on Hoe Avenue. Yes, that's a real place, if you don't know. Hoe Avenue.
Where's Hoe Avenue?
I forgot. Is it in the Heights? I forgot where it is, but it's H-O-E.
It's
a real place. And so I went on Hoe Avenue, and I went to go try to look at a place to rent. And it was, you know, a crackhead in the corner. It was a trap house. I was going through it. So then finally, it was the second to last day before I was supposed to leave. And I went to go see Motown the Musical with my friend Larry Powell, because his good friend Donald Weber, who is now starring in Hamilton, the king, he was starring as Berry Gordy. And Larry was like, we have to see him. But like Motown in 2013, Nicole, it was like Hamilton. Like, honey, Diana Ross was waiting to get a ticket.
Uh-huh.
It was real. Larry walked right past that line. He was like, no, we're going straight to the source and we getting a damn ticket. The lady didn't want to give us the ticket. Larry was showing him pictures of him and Donna when they was in diapers. He's like, this is my best friend. We have to get a ticket. He was like, well, we're just going to sit here and have faith. She said, there is no faith. Like, she was a real demon. She literally said that to us. Like, if I wasn't there, I wouldn't have believed it. So then she was like, two tickets just became available. And so I, like, give her my card. She was like, no, I want cash. So I had to run across the street, overdraft my account, get the money out, give her the cash. And she gave us orchestra seats, Nicole. The bitch didn't even know she gave us orchestra seats. And so I watched that musical and I, like, cried like a baby because at that moment, God was like, you are on the wrong side of the stage. You are, mm-hmm. This is like, girl, hello. That's why I say your dreams are like a boomerang because you throw that bitch and it's just floating. It'll never leave. And it'll come back and smack your ass and be like, this is what, hey, bitch, this is what the fuck you're supposed to be doing. So then we go backstage and I talk to Charles Randolph Wright, who's amazing director of Motown. And I'm sitting there, Nicole, on like 42nd Street, an empty audience. It's just me, him, and Larry. And I think the guy who played Blue from The Temptations, his name is escaping me right now. And he said, you live with fear. Just dragging me on that stage on 42nd Street. And he said, you have a responsibility to live your dream. And you have to do it now. And that has carried me these past 10 years because no one ever told me I was responsible to live my dream, that I had to be accountable. And no one had expressed that with that sense of urgency. And that day I called my mom and I was like, I'm not coming back to LA. And it turned into 8 years.
Damn, I didn't know you were out there for 8 years. That's wild. Sometimes you just need someone to tell you a little bit about yourself. Do you know, you remember Anthony Antamanek, right?
The king. I love him. White people can't stand him because he'd be like, y'all know we racist. Just let's get it over with.
I love him so much.
I love him.
I used to work in the training center and I got real drunk one night and then was so hungover the next day. And I was sleeping in the teacher's lounge and he was like, what are you doing? And I was like, do you want something? Because, like, you know, it was like chill, whatever. And I was like, do you want something? And he goes, no, I don't want anything. You're too talented to be like this. You got to stop drinking so much all the time. And I was like, oh my God, Anthony's telling me this? And that stuck with me because I was like, okay, mm-hmm. We can't go to, you know, work hungover.
Yeah.
We can't, you know, if you have to do something like show up on time or, you know, close to on time. I'm a very late person. It's very bad. But, you know.
Yeah.
Get there. Do the damn thing. Fucking do it. So wait, how did you make your way back to? So how long did you work at The Daily Show?
3 years.
And then after The Daily Show, you made your way back to L.A.?
Well, I made my way back to L.A.-ish in the pandemic because Trevor is very kind. He was like, I don't give a fuck if you go to Croatia. Do you have Wi-Fi? Like, do your job. That's mm-hmm. it. So, like, in 2020, like, 3 months into the pandemic, like, I just could not do it. Thank God I had the best roommate in the world. Him and his partner, they had owned a home in Jersey, so they just stayed out there, so I had the apartment to myself. But because mm-hmm. we was all staying home, I was ear hustling, and the motherfucker who lived two floors up from me was talking about how he was trying to, like, you know, MacGyver some shit to get rid of these bed bugs. And I said, oh, hell no. Oh, hell no. I got to stay in the house and I have to work and try to make light of motherfuckers dying and trying to figure out this shit. And it's a flesh-eating disease. Ooh. I said, I emailed my boss. I said, no, ma'am, will not do it. I wrapped up all my shit. I put them, like, tidy them up and put everything in, like, big trash bags and came back in 2020, but I still had my apartment in New York because I didn't know what was going to mm-hmm. happen. And then American Idol, we was on ice. Like, I'm very grateful NBC, like, they still were like, hey, you know, we'll keep you updated, this and this and that. But we didn't know. So I came back 2020 and was still working the Daily Show, working from home. And then 2021, once we got the series order, that's when I made my exit from the Daily mm-hmm. Show and officially came back to L.A.
That was a whole wild time because same with Grand Crew. We were like, we were supposed to shoot the pilot, I think, or no, maybe we were supposed to have like a table read the day before like everything shut
same.
Down. And then we were just like, okay.
Yeah, I had a fitting. It was so grim, Nicole, because Jabuki, shout out to Jabuki Young White, okay? Because
yeah, he's so funny.
And also, and now rappers, fashionista, Jabuki, mm-hmm, I can slap
doing it all,
him.
Doing everything.
Yeah, like leave some jobs for us, Jabuki. So he, I love Jabuki so much because I was in our like little nigga group chat at the Daily Show and I was like, y'all, they stealing all the toilet paper on these shelves. Y'all, I ain't got no toilet paper at the house and I had no food. Nicole, because I was eating at work at the Daily Show and then like my life was so like, you know, in New York, bitch, you fucking like shower and sleep and shit. You do not go. I wasn't grocery shopping. Shout out to Jabuki because I went to his house and he had all these like food for me, like pasta, beans, pasta sauce. And then he had toilet paper, like literally toilet paper. Like Jabuki held me down like the first 3 weeks.
He was the corner store for you.
Period. The first 3 weeks of the pandemic, I'm like, bro, I wouldn't have been able to eat or wash my ass. Didn't have no bidet. He hooked me up with some flushable wipes. I said, you the real MVP. But yeah, it was really grim. That time, Lord Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so sad.
It was
sad.
Not good.
Yeah.
Real quick, we have to take a break. Oop, oop. We're back. Okay, I have a question. Are you single, dating, don't want to say, married, what's going on?
Divorce. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, I was going to be like, ooh, juicy.
No, not divorce. But lately, I've been meeting a lot of divorcees just randomly because I'm just a people person and talk. So they were like, yeah, such and such, and I'm recently divorced. I'm like, congratulations. And they're like, you know, yeah. I'm like, no, we need to start saying that more because, like, you chose to
leave a situation. You got out of something that you didn't want to be in.
Come on. Like, that's amazing. You said no. You set a boundary. You realize you were aiming too low when it comes to love and romance and relationships. So that's a separate thing. But, yeah, so I am single. I am open to dating, but it's just trash.
Yeah, I was talking to another friend about it. It's bad out here right now.
No, as the Latinos say, as we say, basura. It is trash. Caca.
Ooh, garbage, basura. When I was in Spain, I love big trash. I love things that are big that aren't supposed to be big. In Spain and Barcelona, they had these giant trash cans. And Sashir had left me at that point, so I was alone. And I remember like flagging down somebody and I was like, can you take a picture with grande basura? And the way this person looked at me. But they took my picture and I was very happy about it. So wait, you're half Hispanic? You're half Mexican?
Half Mexican, half Black. Yeah.
Okay. Do you speak fluent Spanish?
No, I did shred out the puss. I was doing it. And then I think because my mom was so nervous and being like, we are in America. She was like, this is America, Donna Glover. Like, you need to speak English. And I think she was like, my mama is so big on like, you need to have a job. You need to have money. You need to be able to make it. So I think because we were in America, she was like, you speak English. So she has some qualms about that because she's always like, mija, I wish I spoke Spanish more to you. And I said, it's okay. I'm actively trying to learn it now because I do want to learn it. It's important for me to learn it. But I can read it and write it like a motherfucker. I can. Oh, my God.
Oh, okay.
I'm so good at it.
That's kind of, I don't know. That's like half the battle.
Yeah.
Wait, so what are you? Are you on the apps at all? Are you on Tinder or Bumble?
Here's my thing. So I'm new to the apps because I was very old school and very delusional. Like I wanted someone to come like, you know, I'm in Barnes and Noble's. He drops a self-help book that we were both looking at. I go down and pick it up. His hand touches mine. We both rise. And it's just like, what you won't do? Hey, do for love. That's going to be playing in the background. And it's like, period. This is it. So no, that has not been happening. So I was like, okay, let me just try on the apps because I am very busy. Like I am a big sister and I take that like very fucking serious. Like my baby brother is my everything. He's my world. He's basically my child and we're 17 years apart. So I'm really like his mother, second mother. And so I was like, you know what? Let me get on the apps. So as I got on it, I was telling my homegirls, I'm like, what the fuck is this? Because it seems like these niggas will get in your DMs. It seems like you respond. They get like a hit of serotonin. They think they're actually like attractive and like about something. And then the shit just dies. I'm like, it's giving like Instagram but tender. Like, it's giving, like, you just want these likes. You just want these hearts. You feel me? I have been very successful on Raya with making friends. But the same thing, like, these men are not applying no pressure. Shout out to Raya, because I've made amazing connections. I'm about to have dinner with my homeboy tonight that I met on Raya, who was there just for friends. I am making great connections with friends. But no shade, you know, we're really at capacity with friendships, because I really care about them, and you have to nurture them, and you have to hang out with them. You have to remember birthdays, and then they had surgery. You have to give them flowers, and it's, you know, like, all of that. So no success on the apps at all. So I'm just kind of like, listen, I am a firm believer that everything I want, I will get. And I think it's going to happen what it's supposed to happen. But it's been very bad. It's been very bad.
Nicole. Raya's so interesting. I love that you're having a good time on Raya. I like did not come to Raya to make friends. So like I turned it off. So I can't see anybody who's like only here for friends.
Okay.
Also, I just like I deleted all the apps off my phone for now. It's soul crushing. Like, I could get rejected for a part or whatever, and I'm like, whatever. It's like not actually personal. You just found the person that you want. And then for dating, I shouldn't take it personally. It's like you found the person that you want. I'm not it, whatever. But hit after hit, it just is really getting to me. So I was like, you know what? Let's take a break.
Are you actively getting matches and then going on dates from these apps?
I was.
You was. Okay, well, here's the thing. Because I kind of approach it from a logistical, I'm such a producer. I'm such like a bit, so I'm like data, numbers. Okay, this is what we got to do. So I'm just like, get your Google sheet out. I'm like, okay, this is what we got to do. I had to date about 30 guys. Half will maybe make the cut. And maybe 7 will be continuously interesting. 5, I'll be like, okay, that's cool. And then we'll probably be down to 2. So I think the fact that you are like actively dating, you know, the saying goes like, you got to kiss a lot of frogs before you get your prince. I really feel like that may be what it is for you. Now, here's the thing I would tell you. This is the first time that I've ever actively just dated, because here's where your girl is toxic. Okay, are you ready, listeners? Okay, pull up a fucking seat. I never knew how to date. I would just get with a motherfucker, find myself just in some type of situationship. There would be no commitment that was ever communicated from his part, but because I gave him some of my parts, I was fully committed. And then he would try to be like, no, but you my girl. But then would date other bitches and be like, but see, you not my girl. And it would be like, no. So I finally realized like, oh, ex, you've never dated. You don't know how to date. Like, you make temporary people permanent, try to change them and fit them into your mold of what it is, the person you should be. But you just need to fucking date, because in my 20s, like, especially, like, early 20s, I kind of got my shit together around 28. But my early 20s, it was like, ugh, I got to fuck it. What's your name? What's your birthday? What's your zodiac sign? Favorite color? Mother's trauma? Ever had a car accident? You got hepatitis? Hep B, C, D? Like, it was just so, like, oh, I had to do this how many times? But now I'm super excited to do it. And this is the first time in my life, Nicole, that I'm actually just dating. No press. Let's go to Yogurtland. I'll put on some aloe, you know, activewear, and through a little skincare. Like, it's not that deep. And I'm not trying to make you my husband. We're just going on a fucking date. And I also actively pick places that I want to try that I would have gone to by myself, because I date myself. I fucking moved to New York by myself. Like, I'm very good in my own company. And that way, even if this motherfucker is a weirdo, this is a place I was trying to go be at anyway. So I'm gonna have a good ass time, because I want to try these tacos.
I mean, that's a good strategy to be like, I wanted to be here anyway. The food is fucking good. So like, it is what it is. You're weird, but yum, yum, yum. I'm having a great time.
Yeah.
I'm not good at dating myself. Sometimes every now and again, I'll take myself to like a movie and drinks, or like a movie and dinner, but I don't do that enough. I like people, because I'm alone at home. So I'm like, if I go out into the world, will I see a friend?
Yes. Well, what's the number one thing you've learned about yourself while dating?
Oh, I have learned that it takes a special type of person to really appreciate all of my energy, all of my little isms. I have a lot of weird things that I do, and I'm a very particular person. So it takes a person who has to love all of that for them to like be in my life. And I've also learned that not everyone likes you. You're not everyone's cup of tea, and you can't force someone to like you. I've spent years trying to force men who actively don't like me to like me. And I think it's, you know, daddy issues, a fun thing, because my dad was a very like analytical person, math, science. He loved all that shit. He was not a creative person. And I felt rejected because, you know, he wasn't like disappointed in me, but he'd be like, are you sure you don't want to do some math on a Saturday? And I'd be like, no. But then later try to be like, but like, what about this? Do you like this about me? And that's what I've carried on to adulthood and have projected on men. So I think that my little break is so like I can just do some soul searching. And I said to my therapist the other day, I was like, the idea of opening up to another person makes me want to walk into traffic. And she said, well, let's not do that. Let's figure out an alternative to that.
Well, if it was, okay, LA traffic, you got a good shot. We move pretty slow. So, if you're on that,
yeah,
10,
let me walk onto the 401 or wait, no, 405 at a fucking 5:30 p.m. I'll be just fine.
Baby, you'll be just fine. They'll be like, hey, you could do a whole hour. You could do a whole hour of some new shit. Traffic will not fucking move, period. But that's so good that you realize that about yourself. Shout outs to you, because everybody's not willing to be self-aware and be introspective and take that time. But I really will say that I think because my life is full with so much love, just love from my community, my girls, my friends, my work, my baby brother, my church family, like everybody is like, I'm just so full. My cup isn't empty. So even though I'm not partnered right now, I don't feel that I'm void of anything. Does that make sense? Like, I don't feel, it's always interesting to me in interviews, Nicole, and I'm sure they've asked you, especially because you have this podcast, like, you know, like, so who are you dating? Are you single? I wish they would ask us, do you have any friends? Because you'd be shocked. You'd be shocked. Like,
yes.
So how are your friendships going? Like, I know people, Nicole, as fucked up as it sounds, then because they're a problem, they're in their own way. If they were to get surgery, no one would be there in that room. That's really fucking sad.
That is That's so really sad. Fucking sad. I do think about that a lot. I think about how, like, I have so many people in my life. I have like very good friends. And then I have this like group of people who are just in my life, like just around me, who aren't necessarily like, I don't talk to them every day. I see them every couple months, but like, I know if I call them, they'll be there for me. And the same, like if anything happened to them, I'm there for them. That friendship is just like a bond, but like we all have different lives and shit and, you know, other stuff's going on. But yeah, that is so interesting to me that some people don't have that. And I feel very full in my life and grateful and loved until I get in the shower, and I don't know why this happens. I'll get in the shower, that hot water hits, and I go, why am I alone? And that's the only time I'm ever like really sad about it. And I have no idea why.
That hot shower triggers that. Nicole, you got to take cold showers now. We got to get rid of that.
So.
I think that's what that means. I mean, I feel like I'm not a therapist, but I watch a lot of Iyanla Fix My Life. So based on those seven seasons, I think you need to take cold showers.
Maybe I do. Does she still make new episodes? There was one episode where she told someone to scream into a hole, and that made me laugh so hard.
I love her. She's very funny. I would produce her stand-up. Her and Dr. Umar. I want to produce their stand-up specials. Oh, abso-fucking-lutely.
I don't know Dr. Umar.
Nicole!
You, I gotta do Dr.
Umar. Dr. Umar is the biggest hotep if there was ever to hold a tep in the world.
Oh, there we go. There we go. Okay. I'm into it. I'm very into it.
He thinks the NBA has something to do with the passing of our dear king, Kobe Bryant. I'm telling you, he got something.
Yep,
like
I'm in. You said hotep and I said great.
It is so funny because he wanted to have, he said he wanted to open up an all-boys school. No, sorry. Well, he would open an all-boys school, right, to teach young black kids. Mm-hmm. Amen. But then he said, Nicole, listen, bitch. He wanted to open up a black revolutionary sports bar, non-alcoholic.
Hey, that's very funny.
Wait, Nicole, I don't even drink and I wouldn't even go to the bar. How is this a bar? Yeah. And there's no beer.
But nobody's drinking. I mean, I guess that's just, I don't know what that is. A cafe.
Dr. Umar is so funny, but you know what's funnier, Nicole? You know, a broken clock is right twice a day. Sometimes he be saying some shit. Sometimes he do it. I'll be like, right.
That's such a funny way to live, to have the wildest ideas and be like, oh, a broken clock is twice a day is right. It's like, okay, friend. But I don't know if you're right ever in a day.
Right.
Can I ask, have you ever drank, or did you never drink?
I have.
And it's just not for you.
No, I grew up with alcoholics. My family is truly like the DeBarges. So it's been a lot of substance abuse that I've watched literally so many of my family members die, either by that or secondhand. Like my brother was killed by a drunk driver when I was 15. So it was like, so even though he wasn't drinking, it was a drug driver. It's like either it was them or one degree of separation. Yeah. So yeah, I have drunk before. I've been buzzed. And this is why kids that grow up in church should not be fucking sheltered, because I got buzzed, didn't know it, went to Virginia to school for 5 seconds because college ain't my ministry. But I went there and they were like... It's not, but go to school.
College ain't my ministry. No, I've never heard that, and it's my favorite phrase. College ain't my ministry. Can't stay there.
They were trying to be like, you can major in English with an emphasis on musical theater. And I said, I want to sing, act, dance, put paint on my face, and ride an elephant right now. Like, I wanted to do, and I was like, first day, I'm a star. So what is this? So I was like, no, not for me. But while I was there for the little semester, some change that I was there, I was at a college party and they was giving me drinks in a red cup. And at the time, I loved soda. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Nicole, you cannot. I was like Kale from Keeney Kale. Uh-huh. Baby. But mine was Cactus Cooler. I'm with orange soda. Basic. Cactus Cooler.
Cactus Cooler is so good. Sometimes we have that on fire. Set and I'm like, ooh, a treat.
It's so fire. And so they kept giving me that, not knowing I'm drinking Smirnoff, the little wine coolers. And I had like 2 packs to myself because I'm like, I'm feeling a little woozy. I'm feeling a little light. Okay, this song.
No.
And my hum set just came out. And I was like, hey, my hum. I said, no, you really feeling this song. And I was like, okay, something's wrong. They were like, bitch, this is what you was drinking. Ha, ha, ha. It's funny. And I said, oh, no. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. But that's what happens when you grow up. I grew up apostolic. Okay, I don't know if you know, but we like the Jehovah's Witness of Christians. We think that it's just us going, child. Oh. It's a mess. Like, the way that we act, child, that way, it's like, no, it's just opposite. It's just us, period.
Just us. Nobody else. Yeah. We're going to the promised land. Nobody else is invited.
Right. It's like the last of us is going. That's it.
That's
we the
so
show.
Funny.
Yeah.
That's my sister also doesn't drink. She once drank like a Lobsterita at Red Lobster and was acting wild. And I was like, truly, you did not have that much alcohol. And she was like, but you know, she was just in the backseat rolling around. And then I don't think she's ever had a drink since then.
Yeah, no.
And it's just so funny. Yeah.
I love being sober in mind and spirit. I love it. I used to take edibles for my cycle. Hello, let's get into some reproductive health. So
wait a minute. You took edibles for your cycle?
Because my periods were that bad because I had fibroids and endometriosis, but I got it removed.
Okay.
Yeah, since I got it removed, the healing of my uterus, it was really, really fucking bad. Like, I've never been this bedridden. Like, after the surgery really got bad, but then after like 4 months, and it took me a long time to heal because they were like, your belly button is so fucking deep. It took an extra hour to get in that shit because I had...
You don't gotta tell nobody that. You wake up and you're like, bitch, your belly button is the deepest shit I've ever been in. That's funny.
So they had to do an incision in my belly button and the two sides of my tummy. Then they put the robot in there and then they slice that shit up like it's like, you know, rotisserie chicken, and they pull that shit out. So I had big fibroids, and I had the big dog was inside of my uterus. She was like a supersized grapefruit.
Damn.
And then I had endometriosis on both sides of my ute. So once all that was gone, I would say I really got to be in the clear, and I'm constantly taking chlorophyll. Like, shout out to all the homies with uteruses. If you have a cycle, however you identify, I'm telling you, chlorophyll will definitely help. So since then, I don't have to take edibles anymore, but I used to take it because my cycle was so, like, I would be in the fetal position at the Daily Show writing jokes, Nicole. It was bad.
Damn. Mine was really bad for a minute, and my moods were really incredible. They were like, I would swing high and swing low, and it was kind of just exhausting. So I ended up getting the implant, like birth control implant. And I've only had it for 3 months, but my period stopped. And I truly was like, finally, it is happening to me right in front of my face. And I can't even hide it. Finally. Yes. I was so excited because I have not wanted my period for about 10 years. Some ladies like it. It makes them feel like, you know, more feminine, whatever. Or people with uteruses like it. I don't. I hate it. I like, to me, it has been a burden for most of my life, and it just kept getting worse incrementally. I'm going to try chlorophyll if it happens to come back. But Lord, oh Lord.
Have you ever gotten a transvaginal ultrasound? Because that's the main thing. Like, I'm partnering with Planned Parenthood to do an event to get these transvaginal ultrasounds for free for 100 Black women and Black people with uteruses, because we should be getting those yearly and no one's telling us about them. And
no, I just get a pap smear.
Yeah, it's far more invasive, because shout out to Mambo Christiana, who was the other Black female writer at The Daily Show, when she saw how in pain I was. And I'm like, girl, I was wearing overnight during the day, changing every 2 hours. She was like, not normal. Oh my. Yeah. Have you had that? And I was like, no. And she was like, you need to see it. As soon as I had a transvaginal ultrasound, boom, big fibroids, four of them, big as day, right on the screen. And it's more invasive. Damn. And 80% of Black women, we have them. So if you line up 10 Black women, 8 out of 10 of us have them, you know? So it's like something that I think you definitely should see and know, just for reproductive health, and not even if you want to have babies, just for like the health. Like, girl, I can't tell you how small my tummy got after I took them suckers out. Like, I was looking pregnant, not even on my cycle.
You know, just the lack of consideration, the lack of care for Black women. I didn't fucking know that 8 out of 10 of us have fibroids. And it just makes me really fucking angry, because it's like, there's a lot of preventative stuff. You didn't have to be in pain for as long as you were in pain. We could have nipped this in the bud if, you know, you had the ultrasound. It just, man, really
fucking, like, makes me so That's mad. What I'm telling, like, everybody. I'm telling any Black person I see, child, I'll be in Whole Foods. I'm like, hey, what's up? What's your name? Oh, Renee, how's your uterus? I'm telling you, like, Jesus coming back. I don't give a fuck. I will be in an Uber. And if she's a Black woman driving me, I'll be like, sit, turn down that radio. What's going, how are your periods? What's up? Because it's just not being talked about. And it's just like, no, there is, I'm telling you, Nicole, my life has been so much better. My periods are, like, it's crazy how under control they are. And also, they say, you know, I have an issue, you know, with the health people and community, but they say they don't have enough stuff to figure out whether or not we got endometriosis. So I looked, my surgeon, Dr. Trong, shout out to her. She's done a lot of Black women in entertainment. That's how I found out about her, because she's done my homegirls. And so I said, I looked at her right before they put the anesthesia. I said, hey, you find anything else in there that shouldn't be, you get it out. She says, oh, I'm looking. And sure enough, it was endometriosis on both sides of my uterus, because it's so hard to see it. Yes, my homegirl had endometriosis on her anus. Like, you don't even know.
Oh, no.
Could be in your ass, on the Nicole. Tushy. On the touch, right in
it. Oh, no. I mean, it is truly so wild. And doctors miss shit over and over and over. I'm lucky I have a gynecologist who's like, she's very caring. And before she prescribed me the little implant thing, she was like, I need you to get tested for blood clots to see if you are predisposed to them. A lot of Black people get blood clots. And I was like, oh, thank you for being... I'm like, thank you. That's the bare minimum. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, and a lot of doctors don't do the bare minimum. So I was just like so thankful for her. Real quick, we have to take another break. Bebop, boobop, we're back, we're back. We're talking pussy health. You gotta get that pussy checked out at least once a year. Ask for really extra things.
Absolutely. Transvaginal.
If you're bleeding heavy, that's not normal. If you're in pain every month, that's not normal. Get it checked out.
Mm-hmm. And shout out to my OBGYN because she was the first one. She is a woman of color. She's Indian in Beverly Hills. Well, now she's in Culver City. She's the first OBGYN that didn't tell me that my heavy periods were linked to my size. Everybody can be like, well, it's because you're big. It's because you're big. It's because you're big. And I'm like,
you know what's interesting? A lot of doctors will say, like, you could fall down and break your fucking neck and they'll be like, it's because you're fat. You were waddling around and your fatness broke your neck. You're like, no, I fell down the stairs. It was like, because you're fat. You can't walk down the stairs. Too much fat and you're between your toes. They will blame your fatness for everything. And I didn't know this. You don't have to get weighed at the doctor. You can say, no, thank you. And they go, okay. And then doctors are, they teach doctors that if you are overweight to talk to patients about weight loss. That is a thing that you were taught in medical school. And I didn't know that because I was like, I don't know. Like, are you going to tell a power lifter to lose weight? Like, they're probably healthier than you. I don't know. It's just, there's so much fucking fat phobia. It is wild.
And that's why we have to talk about it. I know we spent a bulk of this podcast talking about why don't you go get a transvaginal ultrasound? That's going to be the title of this episode. But we got to let Black women know. Goddamn it, Nicole. Yes, period.
So, like, what do you call yourself? A woman of size, fluffy, fat? What do you call yourself?
I don't identify with the word fat. I don't denounce it for other people. I feel like if that's what you want to call yourself, totally good. But it still is a negative connotation for me. But I do say that I'm a plus-size woman. I say I'm a thick girl, thick with two C's, period. I'm a woman of a bigger size, but I don't like to lead with my body. Like if you see on my Instagram or in my art or when I talk about it, that is a part of my experience. And that is an additional layer of oppression that we as actors and entertainers experience. Mm-hmm. But my body fluctuates. Sometimes I really, really love it. Sometimes I'm not fucking feeling it. I'm actively working out now because I did gain an excessive amount of weight last year when my cousin got killed by the police. Mm-hmm. So it took me down a deep, dark depression and I had to be funny and to operate from a place of joy. Yeah. So I just put that under the rug and my body type, I will gain weight if I don't eat enough. So, and then when I was eating just one time a day, it was like pork chop, mashed potatoes, you know, lemonade, you know? Mm-hmm. So my body doesn't work like that. So I'm actively working to, you know, lose weight and get toned. But my thing is health. It's not, you know, skinny. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I identify as a big girl, plus size, thick, with two C's. Yes.
I think it's smart for you not to lead forward with your body. I have put my body just out there because I love the body that I'm in.
Yes.
But I will say it is very annoying when people have comments about it. And I understand posting a picture in a bikini, you're like literally asking for people to comment on your body, but I'm not. I'm just like, I'm having a nice time. And I hate it very much when people are like, oh, have you gained weight or have you lost weight? And I'm like, that is none of your business. Also, it's like the least interesting thing about me. And don't you just like this bikini I'm in? Like, can't we just focus on that?
It's just the scenery, the water, my face, my brain. And I think that is, it's very layered. And I think like, I'm just not someone that, I don't think there's anything wrong. Let me say that with leading with your body. I think the work that you're doing, the work that Lizzo is doing, like the fact that like big Black women and men know that there is a pop star that they could tour with, like that is has never happened, never. So, like, it's just, it's amazing that she's opening so many doors.
She's like, I feel like Lizzo is reparation for Martha Wash.
Who's that?
Oh, CNC Music Factory. Free your mind. Like, she sang, like, the hook on so many different things.
Okay,
it's
I never knew her name.
It's raining men.
Yes, never
she
knew her name.
She never got to have the career she deserved because she was fat.
Wow. And I don't even want to tell you how many, because I'm born and raised in church and I know so many musicians and writers that write some of your favorite fucking songs. And that's just like what it is. So I think what you're doing, just not only being a big Black woman, but like being like brown skin and like being like loud and unapologetic about who you are. And that's what it is. Like, I think that's so brave. No pun intended. buy her book. And I think
buy it.
And I think that's so courageous. But I definitely am not in the space to be able to handle that. And I think like this is the way right now. That could change. You know, I don't know. But as of today, mm-hmm. this is how I feel about my body.
That's why I'm not like, I don't consider myself body positive, because I think being incredibly positive about everything is kind of toxic. I'm like body neutral. It's like your body's what you have right now. And tomorrow it could be different. Yesterday it was different. And however it is that day, let's embrace it. But also it's okay to look in the mirror and go, I'm going to wear a hoodie because I'm not liking the lumps and the bumps today. Yeah. I don't like it. And then, you know, on a Tuesday, you're like, yeah, let me just hang these little titties out.
And you know what helped me so much, Nicole, is that I unfollowed everybody that only posted pictures of them that were photoshopped or filtered, any BBL mm-hmm. body. I unfollowed so many like celebrities and people and stuff who were a unrealistic standard of beauty that I know is being mm-hmm. pushed onto me. And my life has gotten so much better because I was like, why do I hate my body? Why do I think my body is fucked up? And shout out to all the thick girlies and girls, okay? Your body is beautiful and it's the fucking mm-hmm. clothes. Once I got me a tailor, bitch, once I started buying clothes from the UK, I said, oh, it ain't my body. Uh-huh. It's the way y'all fucking make these. This shit is fucking terrible. Yeah, I was like,
well, a lot
no,
of plus size are just patterns that they make bigger and they don't accommodate for like your hips go in a little or your waist goes in a little. And it's just like straight up and down. You're like, what is this?
No, it's terrible.
Real quick, can we talk about Swarm?
Oh,
so you do a nude scene in Swarm.
Oh, yes. Oh, God. Speaking of talking about my body.
You hardly ever get to see bigger people be naked without it being a punchline or a joke. And I loved, so you play a stripper on it. Mm-hmm. And I loved that you were a plus size stripper, B, got to go to, a party where sex happens, a sex party, and you're naked and it's not for a punchline. It's like, because yeah, men are attracted to us. People are attracted. Women are attracted. There's all sorts of people out there attracted to us. And it wasn't a punchline. And did it feel freeing? Were you intimidated? Tell me about it.
Nicole, I am still like journaling and like taking in how beautiful and like mind shifting and life changing that moment was for me. First of all, shout out to Carmen Cuba who casted me in that, and Janine Neighbors. And I'm sure there's more people, Donna Glover, that had to go through all these casting tapes and mm-hmm. thought about that. But when I met with Janine, and I was just like, sis, I've never seen my body get to be the fantasy. Lunel, Little Nicky, Adele in Players Club. It was always a joke, like Chicky Wing coming mm-hmm. to the stage. And she said, mm-hmm. girl, where we're from, this is the bodies that we see. Adama Igbo, mm-hmm. shout out to her and her twin, to the Igbo sisters, Adama and Adani. They were like, girl, this we from Atlanta. This is what we see. Like in Memphis and where we are. Like, and so to be the fantasy, it also revealed, Nicole, a lot of qualms and inappropriate thoughts that I had about my own body, because mm-hmm. I thought there was something. I was like, because my team was like, you're gonna have to like be like topless. So I was like, oh, okay. And then it wasn't until the point when me and Adama had a conversation and she was so kind and was just like, let's talk about this scene X. I want you to feel comfortable. And do you want to just be topless or do you want to be nude? And I took a second. And I just thought about what you just said, how we are always the punchline. We never get to be the fantasy. We never really get to be the it girl. Like this may be the only chance that I get to do this. Not saying that this is the only chance a big Black woman will get, but this may be my only shot.
No, but like this opportunity is very far and few in between.
And I say, you know what? I'll go nude. I say, bitch, for Donald Glover, for you, for Janine, I'll do it. And I had to have a real conversation with the guy that I was with. I was like, hey, how comfortable are you with touching me? Because what I don't want is for you to be like, ew. He was like, no, I think you're beautiful. And I'm like, you need to grab my titties. You need to fucking touch my, and you are paying for this service. If I was a stripper and I'd be like, do your thing, you would do that. He was like, let's go. Intimacy mm-hmm. coordinator, amazing. And so, and also Dominique Fishback, because I had a real conversation with her because, you know, she was topless in the deuce. So as soon as they were like camera rolling and I took that robe off, she like locked eyes with me like, are you okay? Like, you good? And I just like mm-hmm. took a breath. But I felt, because I had just had my fibroid surgery like 2 months before. So my stomach was smaller. I felt so fucking free. They like did all the little makeup. Like I had like got sugared. Mm-hmm. I was like groomed so well. And they fucking, the makeup and hair team, they was like, you look so good. And I, you know, what's funny is that the intimacy coordinator, like she was so good that it got to be rude because, let me tell you, Nicole, she walks out and she's like, nobody look at X when she's walking by in the scene. Cause there's a scene that you see when Dre is with the white guy and I have to walk, right? And I'm like, I knew you was mm-hmm. a fucking freak. So during that time, you know, there's like people who slay in the gaffer. They're in that little hallway. Mm-hmm. So she was like, everybody turn and look to her. No one's supposed to look at it. So as I'm, when they're like, action. And then I hit the corner, I'm naked. Everybody's like, ah! And then you turn into the wall.
You're like,
and I'm
like, nobody wants to see this.
I said, hey, can we have hey, I told the girl, I said, you look at me. You objectify me. This is not right.
Very funny. Be like, I need this. We need the opposite. I need you to look
100%.
At me. It's going to be okay. We have to feel a little bit more comfortable doing this. I really love that. I also really love that you had a talk with the person you were in the scene with before. I think or not, if you're doing anything sort of intimate, a kiss, a hug, where like you rubbing somebody a little bit, talk about it.
He's so perfect. And he was so professional.
It takes 2 minutes. Yeah. I had a guy in a scene where he didn't talk to me before every scene. And all day I felt like I was just dodging him, grabbing me. Our director had to say at one point, I know she's beautiful, but let's keep our hands to ourselves. And he laughed and thought it was a joke. And then I had to talk to him later and be like, the next time you work with a woman or a person, anybody where you have to touch them, talk to them. Talk to them in the rehearsal. Talk like, I don't, like now I know much more how to advocate for myself if there isn't an intimacy coordinator on set. But boy, oh boy, is it a interesting gray line area, because it's like we're doing a job.
Yeah.
But like, how do you communicate your boundaries?
Yeah. But the intimacy coordinator facilitated all those conversations. Like she called mm-hmm. me so much. She emailed me and like, she was just amazing. She was just like, we will not have any issues. But she was not. And I appreciated that so much.
Not here.
Like it was, as soon as they say cut, robes on. But she's like, not here for it. And I think like having Black women at the helm, being the executive producer, the director, and the leading lady, that I was like, yes, I'll get fucking naked. I'm in front of my sis, you know? And all the other strippers that were there, they were like, X, you look so good. They was like this. And the way that they lit me, and they were like, Adama, she just kept reassuring me. And she was like, when I said I wanted to be nude, she was like, yes. She's like, X, we need to see that. Like, I was never going to press you to do that. That's what I wanted. But what if you just said the left tit, Adama, what did you just want a left titty? That's
would've it. Would have been out.
Would have been out. But I love Cheeks was the leader of the pack. She was smart. She was, you know, she tried to lead the women to safety. You know, at the end, she was like, we could say, you know, mm-hmm. he fucking raped her. Like, she was just trying to be solution oriented. And I just appreciated that role so much. And just to, I didn't know if that chance was ever going to happen again. So I'm like, you know what, baby? We finna show my youth. We finna show it.
Show it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I finished it in a night. I stayed up till like 2 a.m. watching it. I don't know. I loved it. So the first episode, I was a little like, I was like, huh.
Yeah.
I'm a little shook. I don't know if I shall continue.
Yeah.
And then it's funny because I love you. You is about a serial killer and you start empathizing with him pretty early. And then you're like kind of rooting for this murderer.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something. The way Dre is written, you're not meant to root for her. You're meant to be like, why won't she stop? But I was rooting for her. I was she'll figure out what she needs eventually.
Uh-huh.
Which is an insane thing to say about someone who's out here just murdering people. But I was like, she has grief that she hasn't dealt with, and this is how it's coming out. Mm-hmm. And also, I think, yeah, I don't know. I thought it was really fun, and I liked it. And I know some people might roast me on Twitter with their opinions.
Goodbye. Here's the thing. This is for people with taste. Period. That's what I'm going to say. It is a mixture of Atlanta meets American Horror Story. And I loved even the discourse on Twitter where people are like, oh my God, this shit's too weird for me. I couldn't fuck with it. I love that. That it made you feel something. Because what I didn't want is indifference about the show. Like, I could go either way. I'd love it. Turn it on. It can mm-hmm. be background noise. But there are people who really, really fucking loved it. And people were like, uh-uh, this shit's too wicked for me. And I love that. And it's number one in the U.S. for a reason. So it's a lot of motherfuckers fucking with it. And it is an amazing, if you haven't seen it, it's a psychological thriller about this woman who's a stan who goes to extreme criminal level activities to protect and uphold her stand-up in regards to this big pop star named Nyjah. And it's mm-hmm. played by Dominique Fishback, who is the queen. And it was amazing. It was so good. And I love that in the end, she gets what she wants. That's what I loved.
Mm-hmm.
I love that her character had a want and she got it.
I also love that the ending is pretty ambiguous, but also is not ambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
And also the documentary episode, I really want to interview the woman who plays the detective because she is so fucking funny. And I like, this is one of those things where you're like, where the fuck have we been hiding this bitch? The woman who plays the social worker, also incredible.
Loretta.
And I was like, where have we been hiding these women?
It's so, but the thing is, so they do good. Such good casting that these are the, this is what they look like.
Yes, that was like a thing. I really appreciated that.
Oh my God. Like from her linen and her multicolored autumn, the necklaces and just her little mannerisms when she's looking at the camera, when she's waving that little finger with the mm-hmm. I'm telling you, and here's the thing to fellow actors, artists, anybody out there that applied for something and got rejected. A quick little testimony is that I auditioned for Atlanta season 3. And Atlanta mm-hmm. is one of the first shows in a very long time that I was like, I fucking have to be on this show. Got really close. They went with a name, came back, was like, can you fly out tomorrow? Because they were shooting in Europe. And then they went with another name. And I was so heartbroken. I shed a few thug tears. And the Lord was like, delay is not denial, you know? And this character in Swarm is a far bigger character, far more iconic, far more standalone. And it's a whole different series versus me coming in, you know, on an already mm-hmm. well-oiled machine, which I would have been grateful for. So if you are out there and you are applying for something and you got rejected, I'm telling you, you have no idea what else is cooking. You have no idea on the other things that are happening that are far greater and far bigger.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's what life is. It's just failures until you succeed.
Yeah. And then, too, it was like, I mean, I did really good on their audition to the point that they were wanting to use me. So I was in their Rolodex of people like, oh, yeah, this girl, you know, like, and it was really great to get. When I got that audition, I was like, this is insane. Like, I fucking have to do that. And then Jamal Lori, who was the writer on there, who wrote one of my favorite episodes of Atlanta, like, he's just a fucking beast. And to be on that set with people that were like, X, improvise, please do your thing. And the other fellow strippers mm-hmm. wanted to play so much. A lot of that shit you saw, we improvised. And we just played so well together. And I think that is what really made us a fan favorite. Like, they really love us on Twitter, which is great. That's so fun. I am not one of those people that don't care if people don't like what I do. I do. I really do. And if Black people don't like it, it hurts my feelings. I want Black people to love it, period. I do.
I'm a little different. I don't mind if people don't like my shit. I'm not for everybody.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, thank you so much for being here. We've come to the end.
Yes.
Do you have any parting words about love or dating that you want to say?
I think if you are someone that is like
single and you're out there and you're dating and you're trying and it's just not working, just know that it's a numbers game. You are going to be with who you're meant to be with, but I don't believe in just like sitting at home and thinking that a fucking, you know, angel is going to ascend and come into your house and be like, this is who you're supposed to be with. Because just as much as I knew that Swarm was an opportunity that I knew I wanted to be mine, I still had to audition, right? You still have to put yourself mm-hmm. out there. So I think continue to put yourself out there. But if you do get in a situation like Nicole, where you're just like, this is like not fun and depleting, go back to center, go back to yourself and realize that you have love all around you. It comes in different forms. It doesn't have to be romantic. But until that happens, enjoy your time in your community.
I like that. Thank you so much for being here. This was delightful.
Thank you, Nicole. Oh, and watch American Idol on Tuesdays, 8:30 p.m.
Yes.
And watch Grand Crew on Thursdays.
Yes.
Thursdays, right?
No, Fridays. They put us on Friday. And it streams on Peacock on Saturday.
Yes. Okay, watch Grand Crew on Fridays at 8:30 and the next day on Peacock. Shout out to niggas.
Yes. And American Idol also streams on Peacock. And honestly, this is a dream. So if you like this episode of Why Won't You Date Me, you can like it, you can rate it, you can subscribe and give me 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. If you write me something nasty hitting on me to whywon'tyoudatemepodcast@gmail.com, I will read it. This person said, as a gay man, I have no clue how to braid hair. Interesting. I would want to practice my craft and skills using your nether whiskers. Ew, I would strip you down, lay you out on my queen bed. Ugh, queen. Spread your legs, then prop them up on a couple of pillows. Then I would pull up a braiding tutorial on YouTube, X your fucking face, and go to town on your curly southern locks until they're good enough to be featured in a magazine at Super Clips. That's not even one of the worst ones. Okay, bye-bye.
Oh my God.
That's it for Why Won't You Date Me with me, Nicole Byer. Why Won't You Date Me is produced and engineered by the sweetest woman I know, Marissa Melnick. It is executive produced by other wonderful people, Adam Sachs, Joanna Solotaroff, and Jeff Ross. Thanks for listening. I love you. Thank you so much. We'll be seeing you next Friday with a brand new episode. What a treat. What a dream.
This has been a Team Coco production.